Buenos días.
Thank you. Thank you so much to Pastor Stacy and Pastor Paul, boy pastor, girl pastor, together. They always ask about the girl pastor because Stacy comes to Nicaragua and the communities. Thank you so much for inviting me, Arthur and Marlene, for shepherding me, and Astrid for letting me stay at her house. And for all of each and every one of you who have been accompanying all of us here in Nicaragua or there in Nicaragua for the past 10 years of our ministry. We're super grateful to be here. It's a privilege, and thank you because you guys are our heroes. Thank you for encouraging us and being the Frederick to us when we're feeling down, when things are difficult. We know that FBC Ann Arbor is right there praying for us, supporting us, and giving us the light and the color when we need it. I bring greetings from all the people at Amos. My husband David, he couldn't be here today. He's actually in Cleveland right now, so not too far away. And then especially all the people in La Danta, they wanted me to send you guys a special greeting to each and every one of you. And that's the community that your church supports. And they always say, thank you to our FBC Ann Arbor. Over the years, all of you have been a beacon of mutual support for our community in La Danta and all our work there. And I hope through my little story today of our work in Nicaragua, you can see that this is actually a story of all of us, of each and every one of us, practicing hope for social justice in Nicaragua, following Christ and being his hands and feet, so that everyone can have an abundant life and not just some people, so that everyone can know God's love and not just some people. So just to share with you a little bit about myself, growing up, I grew up in Potomac, Maryland, which is right outside of DC, and I was probably the unlikeliest candidate to ever be a medical missionary. My parents are immigrants from Taiwan, and as you know, they had to sacrifice a lot to come to the United States and leave their country and sacrifice so that we could have something better. And so most immigrants do not want their children to leave the United States, right? They just said to me, they're like, wait a second, I just worked so hard to get you here to the United States, and now you're going back to a place that's worse than Taiwan. So they were like, what? You know? But my dad and mom, my dad is actually one of 64 physicians in the Chan Chin family. And so when I was growing up, I didn't even know that you could be something else. I was like, what? There's not other professions. It's just doctors. And so my dad actually told me that he wanted me to be a doctor too, so that actually he felt like being a doctor was a great way to like be independent and not be discriminated against. And as many of you know, discrimination is still alive and well in the United States, and my family felt that if you were a doctor, at least you could have your own little shop, and like nobody had, you didn't have to worry about discrimination. So my dad was like, yay, you're gonna be a doctor. And I'm like, yay, guess what, Dad? We're going to Nicaragua. And but actually my dad is the kind of doctor that I actually worked for him for 2 years. And every Wednesday we would visit all the homebound patients. How many doctors still do that, you know? Every day at our house, anyone who was sick, who was our neighbor or family, would always come and my dad would see them at our house. So I was like, actually, Dad, your little, you know, service example is why I'm going to Nicaragua. So my husband and I actually then decided in 2001, after completing our medical education and being public health people, we said we were gonna go to Nicaragua. Actually, my husband did. So his mom and dad are Joan and Gustavo Parajon, and they were missionaries in Nicaragua for many, many years, and he grew up in Nicaragua. And when we met in the United States, we were actually gonna be doctors at University of New Mexico, where we were teaching there. And one day my husband said, I can't live here anymore. I need to go back to my country and serve my people, and I need to follow God's call to use my skills to help the poorest people. And so that's what he did. In 2001, my husband convinced me to be American Baptist missionary alongside him, and I was a little worried. But at the time, our children were only 9 months old, 2 years old, and 4 years old. So imagine that. So my husband, you know, being a missionary kid, he didn't think that was a big deal. But I did. And he said, look, Laura, I'm going to try to help you. You need to prepare spiritually, you know, emotionally. You know, we need to pray about this, mentally prepare for this move. And so, and he told me that it was going to be a little difficult because maybe I'm not used to it. And I did exactly what any mom with two kids still in diapers did. I said, okay, I need to bring our minivan. We had just gotten enough money. We had graduated from medical school. We had just started making money. And I first thing I did was bought a minivan, right? So I had a minivan. I was like, and I need to fill it up with diapers because they didn't have disposable diapers there in Nicaragua at the time. So I was like, I'm filling up the whole van with diapers. And I didn't calculate it. I would just like buy as many diapers at Toys R Us as we could, you know? And then guess what? My child was 9 months old, and he got potty trained at 2 years old, and exactly on the last diaper. It was not calculated, but it was one of my best, you know, parenting accomplishments, was that I did not have to buy any diapers in Nicaragua. So anyways, you know, besides that, you know, little personal little anecdote, when I got to Nicaragua in 2001, I had very limited Spanish. I didn't know the culture. I spent 5 years working in the organization my father-in-law started, which was called Providenic. He started his health work in 1967. So that was 50 years ago. And I worked with him in this ministry. And for 5 years, I got what he called a doctorate in life. Because I had to learn that instead of driving to clinic in my nice little minivan, all like nice little clean minivan, our clinics were in very remote rural areas, and as many of you know who have come to Nicaragua, you have to go by hiking through the mud, you have to go by boat, roads that aren't really roads, they're like muddy little rivers, you know, and so, and in the case of La Danta, you know, a little canoe. So, and some of you know that to get to the patients, you have to hike through the jungle. So my father-in-law actually, you know, I was really excited about working with him because I was like, yes, you know, I'm going to see really cool, exotic medical problems. And he was like, no, no, wait. Actually, everyone gets what everyone gets in the States, you know. Everyone gets diarrhea, everyone gets pneumonia, except they die from pneumonia, except they die from diarrhea, you know, babies. And so he taught me a simple fact of missionary life, and he said, the role of medical doctors, like Stacy was saying, in places like Nicaragua, is to teach others about health so that they can help themselves and do much more good. And that lesson has been the lesson that I learned by working and serving in Nicaragua, that a doctor shouldn't be a doctor in Nicaragua, and it means all of us can contribute, whether you're a doctor or not, because what we're doing is to be a teacher to empower other people to serve their communities. It's what you guys do at FBC at Ann Arbor. It's what each and every one of you have done to help encourage us. So over the years, working at Providenic when I first started, I learned so much about what it meant to be a medical missionary doctor from him. I learned Spanish. I learned how to fundraise for managing a little small nonprofit. That they don't actually, just by the way, they don't teach you that in medical school. I learned how to work with community health workers who we call promotores. I learned how inspiring people are in communities and how local leaders can manage a simple clinic and provide medication in places where there are no medications. I learned that local people can be the best doctors and nurses, and that moms are the best doctors for their children, and that we just need to encourage and empower them. Our health promoters address not only physical health, but also emotional, physical, and spiritual health. And I learned that they are doing what Jesus would do. They're being the hands and feet to people who are marginalized, who have no other access to care. So it was super exciting for me as a young doctor, as somebody who was just learning, like, yeah, you know, the people have the power. It's not the doctors, it's all of them. And it's about working with them. So that in 2006, I was completely blindsided when the organization that my father-in-law had started, Providenic, changed. There was a series of complex political and moves by the actual Baptists in the country, which was very, very sad for us. They destroyed everything that my father-in-law had worked for 40 years. There was a very short period of time in which they took everything. They no more promoter trainings, no more vehicles out to the field. Everything just got taken up to do something different with the ministry. And I didn't know what to do because we had just spent 5 years working so hard to build it up. On top of that, as a missionary, international ministries changed their policy so that they said, guess what? You have to raise your own support now to be a missionary. So those two things together, Providenic being basically shut down, and us as missionaries having to raise our own support, what do you think my first reaction was? I was like, I'm done. No more electricity outages, you know, like doing homework with the kids with some flashlights, some candles. You know, I said, no more trying to raise support and fundraise at the same time. No more trying to be a doctor with like 20 medications, you know, at my disposal. It was hard, you know, and no more trying to collect like tons of Chinese ingredients and food every time and hoard them every time I come to the United States, you know, no more big luggage. And I think all of us can probably relate to that feeling, a moment in time when maybe a relationship doesn't work out or a job doesn't work out or something in your life doesn't work out, something where you said, I'm done. You know, and that was, I think, something that like most missionaries don't talk about, the dark times, the hard times, the times when you're like, I don't think I can do this anymore, you know? But you know what? In the end, I had to make a choice. And this is why I made the choice to stay. In one of my first trips out to the rural areas, I went with my oldest daughter, Christina, who was 6 at the time, and now she's gonna graduate from college in May. So that's how long it was. But we saw a child who had diarrhea, and she was the same age as my little Davy who was at home, you know? He was only 8 months old. And Maria was her name, the mom, and her son's name was Kevin. I still remember them to this very day. And Maria brought her child to us too late in the clinic. Her son had already died because she didn't know that you had to give fluids to your child when they had diarrhea. She didn't know that a baby crying without any more tears meant your baby was really, really sick. And she didn't know how to ask for help. And I know, and the people in the communities now know, that that is completely preventable. And Kevin died because he was the same age as my little Davy, but he died because he was poor and the circumstances of his life were completely different than my little baby. And so why is it that we can send a Twitter across the world, you know, and everybody hears it, good or bad, you know? Why is it that we can email anybody? We can send a man to the moon. We can replace a human heart. But we still can't solve the problems of the human heart, of political will, that every single day, you know, millions of children will die of something completely preventable this year. And in this hour before the sermon is over, 660 children will die around the world of something completely preventable, of diarrhea, of pneumonia, of things that we already have simple technologies to cure. And because of that, you know, seeing promoters that we were able to train so that Maria's, now her babies no longer die, Maria now knows she's the doctor for her family. She had another baby. Her baby's thriving. Her baby's surviving because of health promoters that we have trained with your help in rural areas of Nicaragua. Our area director, Jose Norat, was also God's voice in that moment. And same with Arthur and Marlene and many people who came alongside us, and your church came alongside us and said, you can do this over again. My father-in-law was like, let's do this again. And I was like, what? I have a job in New Mexico. And he's like, no, let's do this again. Because you know what? When you're ready to throw in the towel, there's only two simple words we need to remember. And he said they were just serve. Just serve. Just be Jesus' hands and feet. And that's why we stayed. And that's why, you know, lack of health care for the poorest people, we know that there's a solution. We know that there's a way to get to the people who need it most. And you guys have been part of that solution. So our story now is like, what's happening now? You know, we stayed in Nicaragua and we started over with Amos in 2007. And you guys were a part of that. Amos stands for a ministry of sharing, like Stacy said, and it also is named for the prophet Amos because he was a farmer prophet, so that something that the people in the communities relate to. And he cared about social justice and for the poor and the marginalized, and that's what we're doing together. And Amos is actually how we try to interpret the gospel and put it into action. At Amos, we're practicing hope. That's what we're doing, and that's what you're doing. Hope is believing that ordinary people like me and you can do extraordinary things together. You know, hope is that each and every one of us in some small way can contribute to changing this world. And that's what we're doing together. At Amos, we believe that every community, in every single, even the remotest community, you go to La Danta, you're in the middle of nowhere, there are capable people who are inspiring, who can really, regardless of their education, can make a difference and have the skills. Once you give them skills, they can change their communities. Our community health workers are like the Fredericks, too. You know, they bring hope to their communities, and they bring good news to the poor. They bring hope when there is none to rural communities where children are still dying of preventable illnesses, but where you guys have helped, children no longer die of preventable illnesses. They have a solution. One of my personal heroes, in addition to all of you, is Timotea Romero. She's one of the promoters I met when I first came to Nicaragua. She lives in this really remote mountainside, and she's just so inspirational. When she decided to become a promoter 15 years ago, her husband said he was going to leave her. He said, you know what? A woman's place is in the home. And she had to pray about it. She told me she prayed and prayed and said she saw that children were dying in her community of completely preventable things. So she told her husband, you know what? I'm going to do this for our community. I'm going to do this for all the little girls and boys that die of completely preventable illnesses. And she became a promoter, and she's saved hundreds of children's lives over the past 16 years. And so for me, you know, my choice to stay in Nicaragua actually pales in comparison to the choices that the health promoters make where we work. I'm aware that my choice really to stay in Nicaragua is actually one of privilege. At any moment, I can leave, I can go back to UNM, I can go back to my suburbia, I have the choice. But girls and women in Nicaragua who have a dream to help their communities, they don't have our choices. Yet they make super great sacrifices every day for their communities. And that inspires me, and I hope it inspires you, to choose to serve alongside them so that one day all women and girls will have the right to dream without being threatened by some guy going to walk out on them or something bad happen to them. So, just to end up, you know, the practice of hope in Nicaragua is truly the work of all of us, I believe. We can prevent the fact that every day children are dying from completely preventable illnesses. Nicaragua also has the highest teen pregnancy rate in all of Latin America. We can help prevent this and help girls to achieve their life goals. We can help people who are dying of diabetes and hypertension complications. We're doing some of that work right now in the urban areas. And at the end of the day, right, each and every one of us, are helping the people that nobody is helping per se, right? There's not a bunch of people lining up to help people in Nicaragua, right? Blue Cross and Blue Shield is not fighting to cover healthcare for people who have no healthcare. These aren't people who are making headlines in Time magazine or, you know, Who's Who's magazine. For most of us, these people are unseeable. But not to all of us and not to all of you. We can see them. We've seen the injustice and the heartbreak, but we also see the hope. And that's what we hope that all of us together can continue following in the footsteps of Jesus, come what may, walking together with the poor and marginalized of Nicaragua, with the poor and marginalized here in Ann Arbor, or anywhere else where people's voices aren't heard. To practice hope together, to do justice, to love kindness, and walk humbly with our God. I'm so blessed to be able to be a part of your church, and I'm so blessed, and all the people on our team are so blessed to be part of this amazing FBC Ann Arbor family. God bless you all, and thank you so much for walking alongside us in Nicaragua. Thank you.